us again on a Sunday afternoon. That music is unmistakably the music that brings in our next guest, Alan Rodway. Hello, Al.
How are you, Kev? Yeah. I loved that debate.
God, punchy, punchy with
the... I think you won. I think you won, mate.
I wasn't trying to win or lose or anything. I was just trying to make a point.
That was good. The ability to debate. Wasn't that good?
We've lost it.
We have lost it.
We've lost it. And you know why we've lost it? Because of what you're talking about today.
Technology.
Your subject is, what is technology doing to your life?
Isn't this a big topic?
It's a massive topic.
Isn't it?
Which is one of the reasons why I wanted you to come in early, half an hour early, so as we can actually hopefully get through a bit of it.
It's a massive topic, isn't it?
Well, technology. It's changed our lives.
It has changed their lives. I mean, the first thing to say is that it's changed their lives in some really, really, really good ways. I mean, it's made things work better. We've got better machinery. We've got better material standards of living. So it's got thousands and thousands of benefits to our lives. And we'd be...
One of the best ones for me, it shrunk the world down.
Has it ever?
Yeah.
Hasn't it?
And I kind of like that. I like the fact that we're now not this ostracized 18-hour flight from anywhere in the world, pimple on the bum of the, you know, the globe. We're actually part of it.
Yeah. Before we came on air and you said, what effect has it had on me in terms of meetings and travel and flights and stuff? And I said, it actually hasn't had much. The business world's been a very slow adopter of that part of technology. It's been a massively fast adopter of other forms of technology. But in terms of using video meetings, using Skype meetings and stuff, there's surprisingly little of that going on, little in relative terms, compared to the, how many thousands of people will get on planes tomorrow and fly to another state of Australia to have meetings, swearing black and blue that we actually have to be in the same room to do it. And I'm not disputing that in some cases that's absolutely true, but in other cases it isn't.
If you're flying to Sydney to sack someone, I get it. But if you're flying to Sydney, because I was, in a national position at one stage, and I was flying around the country, and I found it the most annoying part of the job for me, because I'd fly to Sydney and I'd go to a meeting and we'd do the meeting and we'd get everything done and all that, and you'd walk out and go, I could easily have done that on the phone from my office in St Kilda Road.
Absolutely. And the point is, ask the question first. Do you actually have to be in the same room with someone, as distinct from use Skype technology or GoToMeeting or whatever you could use? Do you actually have to do that? And I don't think the business world asks that question often enough, even travelling around Melbourne. We still, most people I'm in contact with in business, we still leap into, we better catch up. Very, very quickly, even compared to, let's book a phone call. We better catch up. We better have a coffee. We're still in that sort of old adage. So in that sense, business has been quite slow to adopt some of the new technology.
That's really funny, isn't it? That's strange.
Yeah, it is. It is. Like we're on radio now, reaching, a couple of times on air we've tested and said, wherever you're listening, let us know. And it's all over the world. Yeah. People say, I'm in Shanghai listening to you.
We had the guy who this morning, he was on with me and Rana, who's of the Osaka Dragons. Yeah. He was listening to us online.
Yeah, amazing. So we've adopted some technology very, very quickly, particularly in the social media and the digital technology. And it's the digital technology, really, that we'll talk about. But there's an article gone up on the Your Coach Online website today, and most of it contains research that I spent hours looking at from experts. But I wanted to start with getting people to ask themselves these questions and then to ask how they feel about their answers. So I won't put you on the spot, Kev, but the first one's a really obvious question to say, how many hours do you spend in a typical day on technology-based devices, on your computer, on your phone, on Game Boys, tablets, etc.?
Can I get text messages? 0433 98 11 16. Tell us how many hours a day in a typical day would you spend on your computers, phones, tablets, Game Boys, all your electronic
virtual devices now that we're using. How many hours a day do you actually spend in a typical day?
There's no price for the most, incidentally.
That would be misleading. How many hours a day do you spend on it, and what proportion of that would be in a work sense, and what proportion of that would be in a personal sense? And none of these questions are meant to be leading questions, as in, I hope you give a particular answer.
There's no right or wrong answer.
No, there isn't. The reality of your answer, and then to say, how do you actually feel about that? Because I'll come to, let's jump to one of the studies that Ernst & Young, now they did a study, it was only of 1,500 people, and that's a very small survey of people, but it's still 1,500 people. Yep. So you say, they found this is just feeding them staggering. You have to question how typical this is, but of 1,500 people, they found they are spending an average of 10 hours and 24 minutes engaging in their internet-connected devices every day. Now, let's say that's over the top and they've got a skewed sample of people. Maybe they've asked too many people who are engaged in the professional, whatever. But even if you bring that down, even if you're getting 2 hours a day on a digitally connected device, that's a heck of a lot of time. So you go, well, what if I'm one of those who's on it for 10 hours a day on a digitally connected device, how do I feel about that? Well, I've got a really strong answer. I don't feel very good about that at all. I didn't get born to say, you know, I want to spend 10 hours a day on digital technology. That's not one of my goals in life.
But it's such a part of everything that you do that you probably do spend 25 hours and 11 minutes. There's only 24 in a day.
There's so many funny people.
I'm trying to work out how much I would spend on that, and that frightens me thinking about how much I spend.
It does.
Tom's given us a buzz from Seaford on 9429 1116. Hi, Tom.
Oh, g'day, fellas. Thanks for this discussion. It's probably more of an issue for ABC or 3AW, but I'm glad you guys are touching on this because I can come at it from a couple of angles. One is, look, there's a growing body of research that's telling us, in terms of literacy and numeracy results, the saturation of IT, which is the problem, is it's jumping into infotainment. 80% of technology is now entertainment, socialising. It isn't educational. That's affecting kids' ability to read and write and do advanced mathematics. We've seen it constantly in the schools. There's no great leap forward. If you're doing software development and those sort of subjects, yes, it is important. So you need a greater degree of self-discipline to be on. The other thing that I'm noticing is they've done the higher the saturation rate of IT, let's call it the infotainment side of it, the less productive in some ways people are getting, especially the students. As also we've noticed when you put 300 or 400 page maths books on a device, screens are read differently than textbooks. So a lot of people made the assumption to throw textbooks out, aren't getting the results of putting a whole lot of, let's say, dry textbooks on machines because they're constantly distracting themselves. So it's a huge issue.
Yeah.
Hey, Tom, can I ask you one question?
That's really good.
Yep.
What do you do for a living?
Teacher, mate.
Yeah, well said.
So, no, you're seeing it at the coalface. You're seeing the effects that it's having in terms of people, I reckon, and I know Alan's going to get to this at some
stage,
what it's doing to our brain.
Well, the other thing is human concentration time in 20 years has dropped from 34 seconds to now 14 and dropping. So that means your ability to sit and concentrate and think, or for solitude, or to study, or to just smell the roses, call it what you like, there's a counterbalance argument that all you're doing is... it's how productive is the time you're doing on these devices? Is it worthwhile? Because we all get on it. But the other thing is, in the sporting aspect, we have a huge issue. As soon as kids stop playing sport or don't have backup sports, let's just say they're playing footy or cricket or netball, by the time of 18, we've got a 50% dropout. Then they become inactive. Then they can get drawn in to more and more screen time. It's quite an issue, and then you eat the junk food and all that stuff. So yeah. I'm generalising.
Yep.
The other aspect is, I was reading some figures the other day. 50% of people disengage when a website hits two pages. Two pages.
Yeah.
So when you chuck... We've noticed, we try to give kids novels to read. So they're complaining for books over 100 pages, 150 pages,
yeah.
And nobody takes notes.
Yeah.
And then they chuck in the maths and science subjects. They stop doing the higher level subjects. There's some real positives, but there's some growing body of research saying the kids are getting the technology too early before embedded skills, educational skills are learnt deep enough, and they just get drawn into over distraction.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of positives.
No, there are some positives and obviously some negatives. Tom, we appreciate your call.
Fantastic call.
Yeah, it was a good call.
Really good call.
He said a lot of really important areas with it.
I'd love you to shoot me an email, Tom, at your coach online, and just put some of that. We might even put that onto the website as well. There's some really good thinking in that. He's covered a lot. Do you like that top text, Kev?
Yeah, my wife was on it full time. That's why we divorced after 25 years of marriage. And people do lose people to the internet. For various reasons, they go and find people on the internet, but also you just lose them to the internet. It's like gone.
So you find them on the internet. We spend our time on Facebook and losing them.
I don't know how any of that works. Now, Alan Rodway's in the studio with me, your coach online. We're talking about what is technology doing to your life? Jono on the road, what's it doing to yours?
G'day, gentlemen. Well, firstly, I'm probably on the other side of things, where I think that it's greatly improved majority of lives.
Yep.
One, for the fact that it's access to information. Now, when you're talking about kids and how long they're spending on the internet and stuff like that, there's actually little things that parents and teachers should actually be aware of when their children are using the internet, and encouraging them to use it in proactive manners that, I guess, teach them to, I guess, weigh up their time on things that are social and fun, as well as stuff that's actually informative. And in relation to sport, my little one, he's actually improved his golf swing, all because of actually assessing himself and looking at other ways that other guys have actually done this.
Yep. Fantastic.
So I guess it's really just dependent on the usage and yep. kind of setting a little few yep. principles in place.
Well said.
All right, now the budding Tiger Woods, well is said. The budding Tiger Woods doing anything that we would consider educational on the all the little devices, Jono?
Oh, most certainly. He's improved his swing. He's also improved his kicking as far as watching YouTube clips about that.
Now, I've send that to Matthew Lloyd, mate. Please.
And Travis Cloak.
But I guess where I'm getting at, guys, is that, and probably what I'd encourage most people is to also look up, I guess, Chrome or Safari or Internet Explorer extensions that help children be proactive and manage their time, as well as being able to prevent them from going or spending a lot of time on the sites that aren't too good and that probably don't actually contribute much to their education.
Yeah.
Good call.
Good call. Good on you, Jono. Appreciate your time. Now, Al, let's go through a couple of these other questions.
Yeah. Second one is, do you feel that email is an efficient and effective form of communication or just a thorn in your side?
Both. Is this multiple choice?
You have to choose one, Kev. How often do you allow your career or your personal situation to be interrupted by digital technology?
If there's a person on the planet who says never, you're lying. Because it does.
Happens all the time.
Yeah, it does.
It?
It's a matter of how many times you allow it to do that.
How do you allow it? How present you are in face-to-face situations affected by digital technology? Now, that just doesn't mean that, like, you and I are sitting in a cafe having a coffee together. I don't mean literally that you'll check your phone to see what's on it. Mm. But you may be not present in that because of something that's just happened through digital technology before you walked in.
Yep.
Or something that might happen as soon as you walk out. So it's not just the literal.
You're thinking about the call you have to make as soon as my meeting with you, my
Absolutely.
Coffee with you is finished. I've got to call X, Y, and Z.
Yeah. So you walk into a cafe and have a coffee with me. Now, in the half an hour prior to that, you drive to the cafe. If you go back to the olden days, you haven't had any incoming information other than from radio. You've heard the news, and that's about it.
Yep.
But you have not had a text 10 seconds before you sit down which said, "We've got a problem. You need to call me now." That hasn't happened to you. It didn't happen. So it's before it, and you also know after it, you've got this, you know, appointment set up, whatever it is. So is that happening to you? Are you an early adopter of technology or a very late adopter of technology, and why? And the why is very important to this. Why? And again, I'm not trying to be prescriptive in the answer, but why do you adopt very quickly? Why do you adopt very slowly, or why you're somewhere in between? And in recent years, what's happened to the proportion of your face-to-face communication with other people compared to by text, email, even phone calls and so on, via computer, what's happened?
Yep.
And you'd reckon that most of us would be saying my communication face-to-face has dropped in percentage terms to whatever. Now, the question there is, well, okay, so what? Well, the so what is that can have an impact on my ability to communicate face-to-face. It can have an ability on how I feel. It can have an impact on the accurate interpretation of the communication.
That's a really key one, I reckon. That's
isn't it?
Because the emails don't get sarcasm, humour. They get anger. Oh boy, do emails get anger. They don't get they don't get a lot of the emotions, but they do get the volatile ones.
Put it in capital letters or in red or
well,
something.
Well, yeah, people do that all the time. But that kind of when you send an email that's supposed to be your tongue in cheek and no one gets it.
Yep.
And it's like, oh, wish I hadn't done that.
I think this is probably an unfair thing to say, but every now and again I notice in younger age groups a struggle to communicate as well face to face, even in terms of sentence construction. And I mean that literally.
Yeah, no, I agree.
And you'll sort of hear, well, how do you feel about that? And the person will say, oh, well, look, yeah, look, I'm not too sure. You know, and that's the answer.
Yep.
And you go, well, I don't know actually. He didn't say anything. So that, now is that because of technology? I don't know. I suspect it does have something to do with a lack of face-to-face communication. I suspect it's got something to do with you're only allowed 40 characters on Twitter. Our communication is brief, it's rapid, it's incessant, it's frequent. It doesn't require sentence construction.
It's emotionless, too.
It doesn't have capitalization and so on. And that, I don't think that's an old-fashioned comment, because there are still times when communication, certainly in business, there are times when your communication in a written form, it absolutely matters. If I put a proposal to a business to say, here's my proposal to coach your business over the next 3 years, and I don't put capital letters in it, and I don't know the difference between a semicolon and a full stop, I'm not going to get the gig. I'm actually not going to get the gig. Now, I'm not trying to be critical of younger age groups. Now, if an inability to communicate in writing is coming from not having to communicate in writing, but being able to do it by voice recognition and so on and so on, well, then there may be a downside in that. There may be a downside in that, if that's not too harsh. And even, do you think about technology even when you're not using it? And that might seem a silly question, but I don't think it is. And are you aware of the effect that technology is actually having on your life?
No, I don't reckon I don't reckon people are at all.
Well, having done the research on this, it's in the article, I was not aware. I was not aware on the physiological effects that technology is having on my brain. And it did. When I wrote this, I actually gave it to my wife and said, I want you to read it because we've got younger children. I want you to read it because I think both of us have to be more aware of the effect that our young children can experience through the technology we allow them to engage, that I previously didn't understand before I did all the research in this article. So a lot of the article's about it from experts, not from me.
Yeah, I want to get to that effect on the brain next. Alan Rodway's in the studio with me, your coach online. What is technology doing to your life? Now, we've asked all the questions, and they're questions without right or wrong answers.
Yep.
So, you know, how many hours you spend on it, whether it's interrupting your life, all those things. So what do we deduce from the answers, whatever they are, from that situation?
My concern started superficially. It then became much deeper when I looked at this sort of research. So I'll read some of this out because it's a little bit technical, but I think it's fascinating. So, well, and these are from experts in the area, not from me. And this is a quote from a guy called Andy Horvath, who wrote an article in the Melbourne Age fairly recently. It said, does technology affect our brain? He says, yes, it does. It says our attention, what we focus on, our sleep cycles. Our sleep cycles are affected by bright light because our brain still thinks it's daytime.
Yeah.
So it can prevent you going to sleep, and it can keep you a little restless through the night. So even at that level, there's an effect on us. There's a study using neuroimaging of frequent internet users showed twice as much activity in the prefrontal cortex of the brain compared to sporadic users. And that's the part of the brain that's used for short-term memory and quick decision-making. In situations where there's a flood of information, we've learnt to skim. Are we becoming knee-jerk, shallow thinkers, or does the internet actually sharpen our ability to scan? To complicate things, many people in jobs that actually require you to think more deeply. Now, if you think about it yourself, if you're on a tablet, you can be on a website, you can dart into an email because it'll ping up at you. If you've got your phone beside you, a text can come through, or a call, or a voicemail. You go back to another website and some smart Google ad thing will pop up in front of you and so on, and you'll go, well, okay, six things are actually going on in my brain. And that's as normal as the sun coming up these days. And you go, well, should we be proud of our ability to deal with all of those interactions at the one time? Well, one, the reality is you're not dealing with them at the one time. You're jumping from one to the other. But this is an argument to say, well, that's actually not helping your brain at all. You're training it into an ability to actually jump from one to another, but you are removing from it the ability to stay on one and to think more deeply about the one issue. And that part of human thinking is actually being changed. And a lady called Susan Greenfield, who is a neuroscientist, said that technology substantially is shaped by with what we do with it and by the experience of daily life. And when I say shape, she says, we're talking literally. The infinitely complex network of nerve cells that make up the constituent part of the brain actually change in response to certain experiences and stimuli up to early adulthood. So whatever you're allowing the stimuli to your brain, it does physically shape it. Not just how it thinks, but its physical construction up to early adulthood. The development of new technology, she says, will affect our brains over the next 100 years in ways we might never have imagined. She goes on to say the impact of microcellular structure and complex biochemistry of brains affects our personality, our behaviour, and our characteristics. In short, the modern world could well be altering our human identity, she says.
Yep.
And that's a neuroscientist. That's not me. Yeah. This is a renowned one around the world.
You become a product of what you, whatever your upbringing is.
Yeah.
Now, if you
absolutely,
if your upbringing's in the country,
yep,
you become,
yep,
that sort of what we, you know, bumpkin, yep, we call them. When we, you know, if you're a city slicker, you're, yep, you know, you're in the city and you've got all those.
Yep.
And you do things a certain way.
Yep.
And the country people do things, yep, their way.
Yep.
And if you now are a techno kid, whether you're in the country or in the city,
yep,
you're going to grow up the techno way.
Yep.
And that is short attention spans, inability to communicate, all those things that you've talked about, yep, in the answers we've given to those, yep, questions is what we're going to, yep, become.
Isn't it funny, like, it changes the subject probably entirely. Like, if you go for a job today, the norm is still you send an application, you go and do an interview. So you're actually judged on your ability to handle a face-to-face communication, yep, once you get into the interview. So you'd actually want to be fairly good at it, unless you want to go in and say, well, look, I can't communicate face-to-face, but I'm bloody good, you know, digitally, so let me send you an email and tell, yeah, me how good you are. Don't worry about client-to-client interface. I mean, it's not going to work. So we've still got a lot of these hangovers, good or bad, that are demanding face-to-face communication. We've still got a lot of parts of our roles in society, not just in our work, but in our roles as a family member and personal relationship and so on,
yep,
that demand deeper and concerted effort thinking, which some of the digital technology is actually physically retraining our brain out of to handle, not just the face-to-face communication. There's an amazing study done where that this lady, Susan Greenfield, talks about, of three groups of adults were taken and trained in piano playing. None of them could play piano.
Yep.
One group was taken in and they were trained for 5 days to play a piano. And they were measuring the stimuli inside their brains as this was happening. They were trained and they were practiced. The second group weren't allowed, they were put in a room with pianos, but they weren't allowed to touch them and they weren't told anything. They were just sitting in a room with pianos. That really helped, not.
Right.
So you can imagine there was no effect on their brains at all. The third group were told to sit in the rooms with the pianos and imagine nonstop that they were playing. Imagine nonstop that you are beautifully playing these pianos. Now, this is what happened.
Okay.
The brains reacted of that group more than the first group who were actually practicing and being taught. The brain stimuli, it was tricked.
Yep.
It was tricked. Now, did that mean they could play the pianos? No, it didn't. But it was having an effect on their brain. So the conclusion she gets to is the power of the imagination is absolutely and utterly real. So you go, well, okay, is that digital technology? Well, it actually is. Whatever you're seeing and experiencing in a digital sense can actually trick your brain into believing there's a competence there and can may even lead you into that sort of behaviour.
Yep.
That is massive. Go back to, you know, what your children are seeing and experiencing. We went out to a family function yesterday. Now I have a 5-year-old son. He's never played on a Game Boy. And, yeah, it would probably be old-fashioned, don't let him. Whatever. He gets onto this game. I walked in. He said, look at this, Dad. This is great. I said, what are you doing? He said, I'm killing him. I said, who are you killing? He said, I'm killing him. Have a look. So I look on the TV. He's going, he's pushing these buttons, going, punch, 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 punch. But on the crap out of this bloke, I'm like, yeah, this is a great game, isn't it, Dad? Killing this. I think it's destroyed the future of my son here, letting him play his Game Boy.
And but they're all on him.
Aren't they what?
Yeah, and that's a social issue that's far removed
different
from
again,
the technology issue.
Different
but
again.
Yeah, it's another thing again. Alan Rodway, your coach online, is in the studio with me. And, of course, you can check this article, What is Technology Doing to Your Life, on your website.
You can.
And you can send Alan an email if you want to. But I guess we've asked all the questions. We've had a look at some of the studies. So what do you do?
Yep.
To get control once again of not only for yourself but, you know, for your children, all that, to get, yep, back to being in control and not having it control you.
Yeah, go back to square one. I've actually got Lane Beach, and I do some work with Lane Beach, and that, yep, sounds big noting because she's a pretty special lady, so I don't mean that. But she told me a story that she, with some frequency, goes to on retreats where you don't have phone reception and so on, and she, you know, she's very committed to doing that.
Yep.
I was with a professional last week who was telling me he's going on a 10-day retreat. Now, I'll say quite honestly, I wouldn't do that. I couldn't think of anything worse than going on 10 days. This is 10 days, no talking, no writing, no reading, no tech, no, absolutely not. 10 days,
oh,
I couldn't do that.
No, me neither.
I'd be bored with myself after one day, I reckon. But a lot of people are engaging that sort of format to...
That's drastic, though, isn't it?
Well, it is, and that's the point, isn't it? If it's got to the point where you have to completely and utterly remove yourself from the world to whatever you want to call it, get in touch with yourself, get, you know, relax a bit, whatever it is, get to know really who you are. Surely that's saying something about the lead up period in your life to get to that. So you say, well, okay, so what's the answer? So we'll go back to square one, and we say this all the time, is to find out, you know, what is it you actually want to be? Who do you want to be, and what do you want your life to be about? And if, and without being flippant, if you sort of said, well, you know, do you actually want to be someone who spends 6 hours a day on digital technology with all of its interruptions, all of its complications, all of its impacts on your brain, some of which you don't even know about, and the effect it's having on other people? If your answer is no, well, you need to go back to square one and say, well, you need to design what it does look like.
Yep.
And you need to have some rules around, you know, like one of these studies says the first thing that people do in the morning, and on one of them, is you check your phone. Now, you might check email, you might check text, voicemail, Facebook, LinkedIn, whatever.
That's because it's the first thing we do. It's beside your bed.
Yeah.
Why is it beside your bed?
Well, that's one of the rules you may want to have. Don't have it beside your bed. First thing in the morning.
It's because the charger's there. But why does it have to be charged there? Why can't the charger go in the kitchen or somewhere?
Good rule. Put the charger somewhere else so your phone has to be somewhere else.
I've got a couple of simple ones. That's a phone. Yep. Guess what I use it for?
Making calls.
Correct. That's all I use it for.
And it's not a phone for most people.
I don't get email on it. I don't get any of that stuff. No email on that at all. Once I leave home, I don't see email. And email's on my home computer because that's business.
Well, you're really good on email, so that's testimony to a very good approach, because most people have email going straight to their phones and they see them all the time. So you have to have rules that will represent and give you a life that reflects what you're actually after, not just to... Because I really suspect, this is why I write the article, I really suspect that a lot of us have landed in a space we never intended to. We didn't design it. We've just had all of these inventions and all of these technological advances come at us, and we are now in a space where we are. Now, that doesn't mean that we desired it. We just are. So the whole point of the article, to use your word before, Kev, is take control. To take control of what you do about email, of tablets, all this stuff, and firstly understand who you want to be and what you want your life to be like, and understand the effects that this is having on you. It's sort of like what we were saying before about multitasking, that for years people have said multitasking is a great thing, and yet the neuroscientists say, well, there's actually no such thing. And in fact, there's no such thing. All you're doing is jumping from one to another. And there's actually studies that prove that multitasking produces endorphins that encourage you to continue doing it. That's in the article too. If you multitask, you get off on it. It's sort of like email, that you can get off on. I responded to 50 emails today, and there's a satisfaction in that. You say, well, is that achieving anything? Well, no, I answered 50 emails. Multitasking leads to its own satisfaction inside your brain, which can encourage you to keep doing the same thing. You go back again. The article also says there's studies around it's prohibiting memory, because it's preventing the ingraining of thoughts and connecting them in the ways in your brain that allows us to memorize things. So all of these things are happening. I'll tell you one fascinating thing I found. This is probably not relevant to anything, but people who are brought up in a black and white age, black and white TV and so on.
Stop looking at me, Alan.
Both of us, mate, in black and white, dream in black and white. Those who are younger and brought up with colour TVs and digital screens that are in colour and so on, dream in colour. How's that? Isn't that amazing?
I bloody will do.
I ask a lot of people that question, and they don't know. So if you're listening, do you dream in black and white or colour? Because there's a study that says, depending on what you were raised on, you dream in one or the other. Does it mean anything? I don't think so, but that's what they found.
That's interesting. I think I do dream in black and white, actually. I'm trying to think of that.
I think that's amazing.
I reckon one of the rules that if you can make each one of your devices, and we've all, you've got to have more than one. You have your phone, and you've got your home computer, and maybe you've got a tablet that you carry with you too. Have it be a specific thing for a specific thing, and keep it as that.
Yeah.
So don't blur the lines.
Yeah.
I don't watch any movies, TV programs, anything on my computer. My computer is my work computer.
Yep.
My desktop is my work computer. So is my laptop.
Yep.
That's what I use them for. If I want to watch a TV show, I go out into the lounge room and watch it on the TV.
That's a really good thought.
And the phone is
really good
a phone. And
really
maybe that demarcation helps me kind of keep that in perspective. And when I walk
that's
away
great.
From all of them and put the phone in another room, I'm not doing any of it.
Yep, absolutely. I said, it's not that long ago in business where people had one computer screen. Mm. I don't know how many years ago it was, but it was one. And then we sort of started noticing, boy, some people have got two. You know, that's pretty good. You don't have to sort of click out of one and click in the other. It's fantastic. Now I'm seeing three. And on one of those, you've got three screens in front of you. And on each of those screens has got multiple tabs open in each of those.
Yep.
So the chances of sort of staying on point, staying on focus of the same thing has dwindled. So maybe there's some rules in there that I should be looking at myself. But I go in some businesses, I've got four screens, multiple tabs. Is it good, bad, or otherwise? I don't know.
Good. I don't reckon. I'm not that good to keep up with that. Two does my head in, and one's basically for email, and that's it. And the other one's where I write and do all my work on, and the other one's literally my email, kind of like my PA. I don't know. Four.
I saw another study last year that said teenagers in Australia check their phones at least every 6 minutes. Every 6 minutes.
Mind you go and sit in a restaurant and you have four people at a table and not one of them's talking to anybody. They're all looking at their phones.
That's sad.
It's awful.
Sad. We were bowling with the kids, Tempe bowling with the kids some day last week, and there was a family in the aisle next to us. Bad luck for them because we can't bowl and all the kind of kids. And every time they'd bowl a ball, and they went back to their phones. Every single time. So I'm sitting there thinking, and I don't mean to judge them. It's just a commentary. I thought to myself, what are they connecting with? Well, they're connecting with one bowl down this alley, and then they're connecting with a text or an email or Facebook or something. They did it every time.
But
do you know what my little brain says? The one thing they're not connecting with is
each other.
Yeah, well, surely you go Timbing bowling, you connect with your family, don't you? You're not to a bowling ball and Facebook.
Well, I go to dinner to talk to my wife and my son, not to look at my phone and go, oh, gee whiz, that's interesting. No, stock price. No, it's just not on.
That makes us sound so old-fashioned, Kev.
We're just off to the nursing home now, Alan and I. And I'll have the iced Vovo and the cup of tea. It's all right. We'll see Smokey on the way. Thank you, Alan, for coming in. Always
pleasure.
Appreciate it. Look forward to next Sunday again here on Sunday Sports Central.